Thanks to the two Johnnies. It's Tuesday the 13th of September and this is Game On. Coming up today, the Champions League is already underway. Spurs kicked off 15 minutes ago in the Portuguese capital city of Lisbon. They are playing Sporting Lisbon and the score was nil-all after 17 minutes. But later tonight, Liverpool play Ajax and we're going to preview that match at Anfield.
It was the worst game we played since I'm here and we had a few bad games. So then obviously you have to understand why that happens. I think that's not a common thing, that's more individual thing, because I think pretty much 9 out of 11 were absolutely below their level.
Yes, lots of association football chat to come over the next hour with David Snaid in studio, Mark Langdon on the line, and Fergal Brennan over at Anfield. And we'll be live to the Ryan McBride Brandywell a bit later on as well, ahead of Derry City versus Sligo Rovers. And speaking of my favourite subject, the League of Ireland, former UCD and Shamrock Rovers player Jason Sherlock is, of course, better known as a Dublin GAA legend. Well, he'll be along to discuss his rare hiatus from the inter-county scene.
Comes across to Jim Gavin. Jason Sherlock wants it in the corner. And he gets inside. This is where he's dangerous. Oh, what a goal. He lost the boot. He gets the applause. He can go back for the boot because the ball is in the back of the leash net.
We will have all of that. The only disappointment being that tonight's game is in the Brandywell and not Talca Park, where we could discuss Shelburne's recent horrendous form with Shane Dawson. But he will give us his expert opinion on next week's Listowel Festival. All of that and much, much more. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Good evening. It is great to have your company listening on the wireless. It is great to be in the company of David Snaid. And I'm also with Ruby Walsh. I'll let it slide, Ruby. I'll let it slide.
What is the story with Shells anyway? It was only happening because I was looking at Sligo Rovers and Derry City's form, and Shelburne seemed to crop up an awful lot, getting 2 and 3 nil hammerings. What is going on at Talca Park?
The week previous, we had a good nil-all draw with Dundalk up in Oriel Park. There was a bit of a dip in form in the historic Talca Park last week with a 2-0 victory to Sligo Rovers. But no, listen, we have a... Sorry, Shelburne, I should say, have a FAI Cup quarter-final on Sunday afternoon, 2 p.m. against Bohemians, a North Dublin derby. So,
biggest game of your season?
Biggest...
It is, isn't it, really? Because you're safe now at this stage.
Yeah, relegation isn't an issue anymore. It is a huge game on Sunday. And later on Sunday afternoon, of course, you can see Derry City versus Shamrock Rovers live on RT television. So, Ruby, I think things are going fine.
It has been interesting. I don't know if you've been picking up any of the kind of the fallout, Ruby, but some of the stuff with Damien Duff, like some of his post-match interviews have been absolutely box office this season. Like, maybe some of the football hasn't been as spectacular as maybe he was hoping it would be when he took charge, but I think he's done absolutely brilliantly, because you can tell that he's kind of bought into the league, having obviously been involved for the last few years at underage level, and obviously when he first came back, obviously getting involved with Rovers. But like, he's gotten under the skin of a lot of kind of opposition teams, not because it's just purely the Amy and Duff, but also just because of just how much he's bought into what it's like to be a Shelburne manager and trying to have that bit of a connection with fans. Because I think a lot of people might have been looking at him thinking, you know, the career he's had, what would he actually will he properly buy into being a kind of League of Ireland Premier Division manager? Yeah. But I don't think anybody can actually dispute that, because it's something that he's properly really has.
He's all in.
Yeah,
he's all in, and it's no coincidence that Shelburne fans have adopted the Cranberry song of Zombie, singing "He's in your head, he's in your head."
But it was just on that, because I remember at the very start of this season,
rather than singing "It's in your head."
But like at the very start of this season, like Damien Duff's kind of unveiling press conference was in obviously one of the bars under one of the main stands at Talca, and there was a couple of journalists had come over from England and stuff as well, and it was just so far removed from, say, the glamour of what you probably would have been used to. Not so much with Ireland, because the great story obviously when he got his 100 cap, do you know where he got his 100 cap presented to him from Ireland? By John Delaney.
No,
it was by chance in a Wetherspoons at an airport in
London.
Yeah,
what airport?
It was one of the ones in London. I'm not sure if it was Gatwick or Heathrow, but he got it literally in a Wetherspoons. That's been spoken about. And but just being there, and even then he was setting out a stall a little bit in terms of trying to sort out lads who'd moved down from say Mark Coyle coming down from Finn Harps, giving up a job, a very good job in a hospital, to basically be a part-time, well, literally he is. He's a full time footballer but on part time wages, yeah, and trying to sort lads out with getting them houses, trying to get them, and everyone knows what it's like trying to get that sorted in terms of at Dublin at the moment or around the country. But I just think for next season, because they are safe and obviously the cup, it could be just a really fantastic end of the season for Shelbourne, you know.
I wouldn't mind a visit to the Aviva Stadium again. Robbed against Sligo in the cup back in 2011 or whenever it was, penalty shootout. That
was it, Aviva then, or was it Lansdowne Road?
No, it was Aviva. Derry City, I think, played the last FAI Cup final in the old Lansdowne, if memory serves me right. Listen, we actually my news headlines, Ruby, begin with some League of Ireland news, because South Dublin County Council has opened a tender process for the naming rights of Tallaght Stadium. The venue is home, of course, to the Republic of Ireland women's national team, the men's under 21 side, as well as League of Ireland side Shamrock Rovers. So we'll be interested to see what the new name of Tallaght Stadium is. Galway United has said it would be unmanageable to take Galway's women's football club into their operation at present due to their current staffing levels and volunteer pool, yet the League of Ireland club will begin the process of dialogue with interested parties committed to the development and growth of women's football in the area following the news of Galway WFC's decision not to apply for inclusion in next season's Women's National League. We'll get the thoughts of David Snaid on that, because so much good news for women's football, it'd be a disaster if football wasn't played at a senior level in Galway. And this ties in with our Jason Sherlock chat. Perhaps Leinster have confirmed that former Leitrim and Dublin footballer Declan Darcy has joined their province as performance coach. Darcy was a key member, of course, of Jim Gavin's Dublin coaching team during their 5-in-a-row run of All-Ireland senior football titles. So that's the news headlines from today, really. On that Galway story, Ruby and David, before we welcome Mark Langdon into the conversation on European football, it would be an absolute disaster, David, you know, and that's not hyperbole or anything, given all the feel-good factor around women's football, if it was to pull out West.
Well, that was it, because like, obviously when the news would have broken, you kind of get a sense of it, of the shock that would have kind of emanated pretty much from people about it, more so because of the fact that they've kind of been an established club over the last decade. It's not one of them where maybe it was a new venture and kind of maybe things didn't kind of materialise for them, you know. This has been a club that's been obviously entrenched in the community. When you listen to, obviously you read through some of the statement that's come out, and the fact that Galway United, that is now as well, are talking about like the fact that they have to try and to kind of not so much be a saver, I suppose, the Comer group, but like the realities, like it is, I suppose, in the League of Ireland, especially now, even with the underage structures, and that are obviously now going to be involved in the women's game, because that's what's needed to bring it forward. It's obvious, but it is just a cost, you know what I mean? It's like, just like in the GAA, when you scratch beneath the surface, like volunteerism is basically underpinning the national leagues, the League of Ireland and the women's game. You know, there's no other way of looking at it. Yeah, say with Galway United, obviously they have, say, the finance, say, from the Comer group and all the rest of it, but day to day match days and just keeping the club going, like throughout the League of Ireland, it just relies on volunteers and
a few sponsors. You mentioned that, like, yeah, even in Galway Women's Football Club statement, they mentioned about putting in significant contributions made by the McDonough family, Pat and Una, who have been the main sponsor of the club for many years. Other sponsors such as University of Galway, Best Drive, Galway City Council, Seven Bar and Ground and Co have been more than generous in their sponsorship also. But it's nearly day to day, you know, these clubs are running at.
Yeah, and like if you look at it from the point of view of, say, one of the big criticisms I would say in the League of Ireland, in the men's, the Premier Division, is the almost concentration of clubs that would be around the Dublin area. But then when you look in the women's league, it does get, you do get the sense that it is more like an All Ireland league, and the fact that you have, say, Treaty and Cork, you have Sligo Rovers, obviously there's Bowes, there's UCD Waves, like Athlone, there's Piemont, Shells, Wexford, and then Galway. Like, that's where, again, and this announcement being made obviously when the season is still going on, and like those players now in a state of flux and limbo, but that's also an element where, like, it's a big part of that country, of in that part of the country, you know, yeah, what I mean. And like, that's where we talk about kind of, say, women's football progressing. There's still major issues that still have to be resolved, you know what I mean. Like, it's like, you can't get away from that, you can't shy away from that either. So, and this has just kind of brought some of the kind of just the issues that kind of bubble under the surface, this has maybe brought it to the fore a little bit. So
hopefully something is resolved, Ruby.
Maybe it will, but a bit of luck it will. Anyway, still nil all between Tottenham Hotspur and Sporting Lisbon after 27 minutes. But speaking of clubs in a flux, Liverpool are playing Ajax tonight, Mark Langdon. Will they be looking forward to this one, or is it going to be another sticky night for them, just like it was last week against Napoli?
Yeah, I don't think Liverpool will be overly looking forward to any game at the moment. They certainly Nowhere near the levels that we've come to expect of them. That performance you mentioned there, Ruby, last week in Naples was about as bad as I can remember. Liverpool under Jurgen Klopp, there was maybe that game against Aston Villa when they conceded seven, when during the COVID time that was worse, but that's about the only game. It was an awful, awful performance from them. So I definitely think that the break will have done them good. No Premier League games at the weekend, and Jurgen Klopp would have spent many hours, I'm sure, on the training ground trying to right the wrongs of what happened last week. But I'm sure there'll be some nerves around Anfield. Usually you fancy Liverpool at home on European nights, but and I still probably do, but it certainly looks like a different game than sort of a week ago, when I think most people would just have assumed that Liverpool would have beat Ajax. I don't think you can assume anything with the Reds at the moment.
No, you can't, but they have been notoriously slowly out of the blocks. They were 4-0 down at the 47 minutes last week. Grand, the only time they've showed up this year, they beat Bournemouth 9-0. Like, that slow start is just catching them out too badly the whole time now.
Yeah, I think the Jurgen Klopp got very angry when a journalist quizzed him on Liverpool's slow starts.
When you point out the obvious, no one likes it.
that is true. I mean, it is often said that, you know, it's usually kind of the truth is what really upsets people in those type of interviews when it is hammering home a point. I mean, they definitely are starting slowly. I think they're just playing slowly, though, in general, really. I mean, the midfield, which is so often, under Jurgen Klopp's tenure, has been the machine, really, from which everything else works for Liverpool. They're the ones that set the press. They're the ones that enable Liverpool to win the ball back high. They're the ones that enable Liverpool's defenders to defend on the halfway line, because, you know, they put pressure on the opponents and you can't get those through balls, past the fullbacks, which is where all the space is for Liverpool. So that midfield is completely broken down at the moment, and I thought it was very interesting last week when Jurgen Klopp said that maybe we have to reinvent ourselves, and that for me means that the team news that comes out of Anfield tonight is really intriguing. What did he mean by that? Did he, was it just something he said in spur of the moment? He was quite angry at the time, or is he going to maybe sort of rein it in and not defend so high up the pitch? Is he going to potentially, change formation slightly? We'll just have to wait and see. But I mean, usually, Liverpool just play one way and one way only, whether they're playing Ajax or Manchester City or Bournemouth. So that reinvent yourself comment, I found very interesting. And I suppose we'll know more soon enough when the teams are announced to see, if there is a reinvention, or whether he just said it in anger after such a bad performance.
Well, we will hopefully be crossing live to Fergal Brennan. Well, we will be crossing live to Fergal Brennan regardless, but hopefully he will have a bit of team news before we come off air at 7 p.m. David, Mark mentioned there that the Klopp comments, and they were quite striking, to be fair. And, you know, he went on to say it was a real horror show, the worst game we've ever played since I came here. We didn't hide anything, we didn't hold back, all in reference to that Napoli drubbing. Have they seemed mentally fragile? As well as the midfield gone missing and the defence being overrun and so on, but mentally, has there been a change?
I don't think so. I think the comment saying about reinvention, I think that just seems like obvious after a certain amount of time, and I don't think it's necessarily a case of maybe reinvention. It's just like any manager, any top team, like, you do have to go through cycles, and it's about managing that change in personnel, and about, like, just progression. That's what happens. Like, it's just the nature of football. Like, you can't play one way all the time and continue like that with the same amount of players, when naturally those players need to obviously have to change. There has to be an element of just like players moving on, which has happened with, say, Sadio Mane, and then obviously Darwin Nunes comes in, a completely different type of player. So maybe is that already in their thinking? Like, one of the things Liverpool have been famed for over the last number of years, with the success they've had under Klopp, and obviously challenging Man City and being the ones capable of actually putting it up to Man City, because obviously if it wasn't for Liverpool, City would have been running away with league titles pretty much like Bayern Munich have, but in Germany. But like, it's a case then of, well, like, is it a case of reinvention and building a team around Darwin Nunes? Did he see that being the focal point? Because it's just the nature of it. Look at the team and the players that they have, like, even in the midfield. Like, it's something that all the top managers and the top clubs have had to be able to do, is that being phasing players out, but trying to maintain that element of success. And like, it's very difficult, you know what I mean? Sometimes maybe you might have to deal with just a season of, you know what, a bit of flux, but then believing in the manager, because, like, let's be honest, you can't be questioning him already because of a poor start to a season, when it's just a case of just maybe a little bit of a transition. But the biggest, the best managers and the biggest clubs make sure that transition doesn't labour into maybe two or three seasons, and it could just be a few months. Obviously the World Cup is going to be coming along as well, and after that you never know what's going to happen with the finish to the season. But I don't think he should, at this point it's a case of questioning Liverpool's mentality when you see what they've already achieved. Just a case about maybe having that question, well, how long does this go on for this season, and can it be nipped in the bud quickly, because it needs to be. Like, that's when, if this lingers on, that's when bigger questions and harder questions, I suppose, would need to be asked.
Mark, speaking of reinvention, there was a couple of different press conferences this afternoon surrounding Chelsea. Graham Potter was out first. They obviously got their man. We were wondering last week, would they get him? He's never been to a Champions League match.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's a remarkable rise, really, for Graham Potter from Östersunds, and what he did with Swansea, Brighton, now Chelsea. I think he deserves his opportunity at Chelsea. I suppose I'm just interested to see how those methods work. He's somebody that he's not just about improving players as footballers and as right backs. He believes in this kind of holistic approach where, you know, you improve the person, and you know, there's all this kind of work that he does that's not always football related, you know, and the way that he knits that group together so tightly and, you know, works within the community. And you just wonder, I suppose, whether that can play out at a club as big as Chelsea. And maybe that's what Chelsea need and want from, you know, the new owners are talking about a new direction. But I think it is very different when you're managing Brighton and Swansea and those players that play for those clubs, and then moving to a squad that is very different in the one that Chelsea have put together. A lot of those players have already won Champions Leagues, and you just mentioned there, you know, Graham Potter hasn't even been to a Champions League game. So he needs, I think, to just get his methods across, and he needs buy-in from the players and the squad. The way I see it going wrong for him is if those players decide early on that, you know, they're not having him. And we have seen that, you know, with other managers previously at other clubs. So if he can get that buy-in, I think he'll do a very good job, because, I mean, what the work he did at Brighton particularly was just fantastic. You see the players they lost, and they don't actually get any worse. And, you know, the sort of style of play as well, I think, is one that would be suited, if you like, to a bigger club. So I'm intrigued to see how he gets on, but I think it's about as much managing the dressing room as it is, you know, sorting out the tactics and winning games, because he will need that buy-in from Aubameyang and Sterling and Koulibaly, Thiago Silva, you know, players that have frankly been higher up the ladder than what he has. And, you know, that's always it can be difficult for managers. You look at someone like Zinedine Zidane, when he walks into that Real Madrid dressing room when he was manager there, nobody can question Zidane, because, you know, he's won the absolute lot. And that is, I suppose, the biggest doubt, I would say, over Graham Potter. But I hope it works out, because I really like the way his teams play football.
Well, there certainly is an element of risk from all parties involved. Let's hear from Graham Potter now.
The beauty of football, the beauty of life, you never know what's around the corner. Things happened incredibly quickly. It felt really, really positive. It's been a whirlwind in terms of getting to know people, leaving Brighton, learning about the players, getting to know them. But so far, it's been really, really positive. Risks. Well, if we walk out the road over there, there's a risk. You know, that's what life is. I mean, no one knows what's going to happen in the future. I left England, I think, when I was 30 years old, and I went to a club that had sat the manager every year for the last 5 years. Fourth tier in Swedish football, left a secure job, left my wife's business, you know, for an opportunity. And 17 years later, after taking, I think, careful steps with my career, of having just jumped at the first opportunity, I've tried to understand what was involved and whether it was the right time for me to take the next challenge. Life's about going outside of your comfort zone, taking responsibility, believing that there's more to us than what sits here now. Like I said, I don't really see it as a risk in a negative way, but I think everything is a bit unknown, and that's the beauty of life.
Certainly is the beauty of life. It will be interesting to see how he handles being under the microscope, and I want to get your thoughts on that, David, in a few moments. But Todd Bowley actually was conveniently speaking in New York City today on the overall picture of what he sees Chelsea Football Club as, because there's been so much change.
I think it's no different than running any human capital business, where it's all about getting the right resources, making them collaborate, getting them organized, thinking about, you know, how you have, you know, a global business at a local level. So, you know, I think we're going to be continuously adding resources. You know, I think we've been talked about having a multi-club model. I would love to, you know, continue to build out the footprint. You know, I think that, you know, there's different countries where there's advantages to having a club. You know, Red Bull does a really good job. They've got Leipzig and they've got Salzburg, and both of which are playing in Champions League. So, you know, they've figured out how to make that work. You have Man City, which has a very big network of clubs. Mm-hmm. You know, because I think the challenge that Chelsea has right now, or one of them, is that, you know, when you have 18, 19, 20-year-old superstars, you know, you can loan them out to other clubs, but you put their development in someone else's hands, right? So I think that, you know, our goal is to make sure we can show pathways for our young superstars to get onto the Chelsea pitch while getting them real game time. And to me, the way to do that is through, you know, another club somewhere in a really competitive league in Europe.
Shane, you surely rang him and made the pitch for Damien Duff and Shells.
Not quite. We're a self-sufficient running club, Shelburne Football Club, are, with alleged American backers.
Well, in fairness, Duffer has kind of formed for being involved with a satellite club, hasn't he? He was with Melbourne. Was it Melbourne who are one of the Man City's clubs? So,
yeah, but we're talking about Todd Bowley and we're talking about Chelsea. So, speaking of Todd Bowley, he wants the Premier League to launch an all-star game, North versus South. The new Chelsea Football Club owner said, "I hope the Premier League takes a little bit of a lesson from American sports and really starts to figure out why isn't there an all-star game." So, David Snaid, you've heard Graham Potter, you've heard Todd Bowley, and I've read out a tweet there. What do you make of it all?
No, if there's one thing modern football needs, it's definitely one more pointless fixture.
This is true. And more managerial sackings.
No, yeah. And that's just, I think that's just obviously it's a gimmick that kind of maybe works in maybe American sport, because it seems to be more part of the culture. I think it'd be very difficult to even find a space for it in the calendar in British football. What does seem to be more interesting listening to Todd Bowley is, it does seem as if he's come in with that, with the Clear Lake group, in terms of, I know he's the front and centre of it, but there's a lot of people in the background. There are people who are serious about what they want to do with Chelsea. Like, think about it, like, it's a club and prime, so as they say, real estate in West London. But if you look at what Man City have done, that seems to be pretty much the kind of, I would say, the blueprint for what they want to achieve now. And you talked there about Graham Potter and some of the progress he's made, and looked upon as almost this holistic type of manager, but he's also just a very, very astute manager. And yeah, he hasn't quite maybe managed at the level that Chelsea are at now, in terms of where the demands are. Yeah, you have to play well, obviously, and you need players to produce, and players, and we want to see good football, but it's about winning. That's what basically demand will be on Potter now, and he's shown at Brighton that he has been capable of doing that to a certain degree, to a certain level, and there always did seem that there was maybe just that ceiling that you couldn't get past, which is the case for so many clubs, where if it's a case of maybe just not having that killer instinct in the final third and getting to a certain point and just not having that, and in theory he should now have that at a club like Chelsea. So, like, in terms of a new manager and a coach coming in and having the respect of players, I would say he learned it pretty quickly, because of how good he is as a coach and how he gets that across, and the method that he kind of has. Because anyone who talks about Brighton, like, they can adapt in games, and players just know their roles, and that's another thing. Like, there's nothing going to be left to chance. Players aren't going to be not understanding what their exact role are, so that's never going to be an issue. And considering the amount of players now, if you look in that Chelsea team, who come through, say, academy systems as well, and just have those demands where they need to be told, essentially, this is exactly what you have to do within a structure, that's basically what Graham Potter provides. And it's going to be fascinating to see, because hasn't worked whereby maybe, say, a young British manager or Irish manager, in Brendan Rodgers' case, when he went to Liverpool, where he came desperately close to winning the league with Liverpool, and God knows where his career could have gone had had they managed to do that. And now it's going to be very, very interesting to see if Power can actually do that and if Ted Bolley is going to be as patient as he says he's going to be.
Time will tell, time will tell. But Mark Langdon, there is many more games in the Champions League tonight. Bayern Munich versus Barcelona. Lewandowski going back to Munich, but not playing for them.
No, absolutely. I mean, this is, you know, I think the game of the night, really, to see how far Barcelona have started the season really well and to just see how far they've come, because they were humiliated by Bayern in recent Champions Leagues, been absolutely thrashed by them. This looks like a, you know, a very different team. We've spoken all summer about their huge investment. Lewandowski started brilliantly for them. Ousmane Dembele back to his best. Rafinha, the former Leeds player, has also been chipping in with goals. Really like the midfield with the two young academy players, Pedri and Gavi, that have come through the system. Always a test against Bayern Munich, but Bayern haven't started the season well in the Bundesliga. Got a great result away to Inter on match day one, but in terms of the Bundesliga, been dropping points far too often. A bit of pressure building actually on their young coach Julian Nagelsmann. So maybe an opportunity here for Bayern to really grab some revenge for, like what I say, was been some absolute batterings at the hands of Bayern.
Mark, we're going to fly through the rest of them. So, in a word, Bayer Leverkusen versus Atletico Madrid.
Atletico.
Marseille versus Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yeah, Marseille are in good form. Go for them.
Go for them. Porto versus Club Brugge.
Porto should beat Bruges.
And Inter Milan will win the last game because I can't pronounce the first team. Victoria
against Pilsen. It was 1-0 the last time I saw. Dzeko scored. So if it's still that score, then I'd say the Inter.
It is indeed still 1-0.
Still 1-0. Yeah. They beat Bayern Munich last week. Mind you, they have lost 3 of the last 5 Inter Milan, so they will need a result. Mark Langdon, thanks a million for taking our call. We have a quick break to take.
Game on 2FM.
Very, very welcome back to Game On this Tuesday evening. David Snaith still in studio. He'll be keeping an eye on the Spurs match in Sporting Lisbon. However, myself and Ruby are going to be chatting to Jason Sherlock in conjunction with Sport Ireland launching the Workout What Works For You campaign, which is supporting men over 45 to be more active and increase their daily physical activity. Repeated studies, including Sport Ireland's most recent Irish Sports Monitor, have consistently shown that males aged over 45, particularly those from disadvantaged communities, are amongst those least likely to be active. The benefits of being physically active include improved fitness, better mental and physical health, and indeed more energy. So Jason Sherlock, thank you very much for taking the call, first and foremost. How are you?
I'm good, Shane. Thanks for having me.
No worries at all. Before we get into the conversation, we've a text in here. Please get Jason Sherlock to wish good luck to his old club, Ballyhea, County Cork, in the Intermediate Camogie Championship against Newtown Shandrum. A win tonight sees them into the county semi-final.
And I hope they do very well. Yeah, I suppose it's one of my claim to fame that not many people know that I played a bit of hurling down in North Cork and in Ballyhea, and have a county medal and a good few North Cork medals from my time down there. Took them about 3 years to ask me did I play football, but always loved my time down there. And when you meet anyone from a hurling perspective, it's always good to be able to share that story with them.
So it's Jason Sherlock, the former UCD Shamrock Rovers striker, Jason Sherlock, the former Cork club hurler, and Jason Sherlock, the Dublin legend, but also Jason Sherlock, the avid golfer, I'm right in saying.
That is. I'm actually on the putting green as you speak, Shane, taking a few putts here in Castleknock. It's a beautiful evening. I thought you could see me. But I enjoy, I suppose, I was involved with Dublin up until 2019. And then when I finished up there, I joined the Castleknock Golf Club, which is very close to where I live. And I've spent a lot of time here since.
Jason, the fella that spends a lot of time on the golf course isn't really doing much else. So what else are you doing?
I suppose from a working perspective, Ruby, I'm in DCU and I'm very lucky to have a great role there with a great team and the Educational Trust. So that keeps me busy during the day. But I suppose I have been kind of making up the non-working hours on the golf course. And obviously, like us all, we always look to explore other avenues and other opportunities. So I suppose I'm lucky that one or two of them have come my way.
Not so bad. What are you playing off?
I'm playing off a bad five at the moment, so
Too honest.
Not getting enough time out in the.
Sorry to cut across. There's no such thing as a bad five. Come on, I had Ruby on yesterday, waxing lyrical about playing in the pro-ams and everything else. A bad five.
Yeah, but you have to have enough shots up your sleeve, so when you're not really good enough that you actually can count, when you're playing off five, you kind of have to make sure you hit every ball.
Yeah, see, Ruby's taken that from his horse racing days. It's good to have a few pounds up your sleeve, and I suppose I'd say Ruby might be like that on the golf course, all right.
Absolutely, there's no point in playing if you can't play to win.
I wouldn't disagree.
That winning mentality never leaves you elite sportsmen, does it?
Well, it's more the competition. I think that's the great thing about sport and, I suppose, physical activity. Like, you can be competitive in your own way. And again, like, for some people, that's obviously running or cycling or swimming. For me, it's more kind of competing against myself and I suppose my friends for a fiver at the weekend. But it's always nice to kind of keep you focused.
That's actually really interesting because I saw a quote from yourself, I think it was in the Indo, and you mentioned about Quinton Carew, who was also in the Castleknock Golf Club with yourself. He won the Irish Close Championship last month. And you were asked what your idea of perfect happiness is. And you mentioned it was seeing a guy like Carew celebrating success with friends and enjoying the spoils of his hard work. Being there in Castleknock to see last week was very satisfying. I mean, Jason, is that something that drives you on these days at this stage of your life, trying to inspire others to achieve their best and take the pleasure out of seeing other people's happiness?
Yeah, well, I think as sports people, we love sport and we love all sports and we love the competitive element of it. And for every winning sports person, there's a lot more that lose. So I think when you see someone or a team prepare and perform and have success, it's very satisfying. And I'm sure Ruby has had plenty of experiences when winning a big race and having the kind of the trainer and the stable staff kind of basking in that glory. It's a special thing. So in this case, to see Quinton, who as you mentioned is in Castleknock, seeing him over the last few years, and then the way he won the Irish Close was unbelievable. It was like a movie script. It was nice to see him up here with his family and his friends, and then obviously some of the Castleknock members. So really enjoyable. And I think when I look back at my own playing career, they're the kind of the moments and occasions that you really enjoy, when you get to enjoy the spoils of war over a beer or two with your friends or your buddies.
But Shane, Shane Lowry, enjoying a few points. that is the beauty of sport, though. I mean, it teaches, because sport is so competitive and you lose so much, you think of the world now and how people try to be so perfect and expect so much. Sport teaches you to lose so much that you really enjoy winning. It helps to round you as a person.
Yeah, and it took me a long time to kind of understand that. Like, that I think we're all kind of guilty of judging ourselves when we win, thinking we're great, and then I suppose the flip side is when we lose, we see that we're a total failure, when the reality is it's not the case at all either way. I think what I've learned over the years is all you can do is control what you can do, and if you prepare as best you can, if you go out and you perform as well as you can, you can get satisfaction in that. We all like to have a bit of tin on the cupboard or the counter, but at the end of the day, that's sometimes outside your control. So it's important that you enjoy the journey along the way as well, and not to be kind of too overly focused on whether you're successful as you play.
You've had two great journeys, one as a player and the other as a coach then with Dublin. Which one would you say you enjoyed more?
I think one is a consequence of the other. I think if you look
at
my playing career...
It was a yes or no answer. I preferred A or I preferred B.
Well, if you look at the playing career, like I won in my first year. I won in All-Ireland in my first year. I lost for the next 14 years. But then if you look at my coaching career with Dublin, I was involved for 5 years and we won every year. So I suppose you could say, well, then the obvious one is the second one. But in saying that, I probably wouldn't have been the coach that I was or I could be only for the experience I've had, because we're all a circumstance of our experiences. And I don't think I would have added as much value to that Dublin team if I had been as successful as I would have liked as a player. I think obviously in defeat you learn a lot of lessons and you remember a lot of hard lessons, and I think that's definitely instilled in me as a person and as a coach moving forward.
I know Ruby has a follow-up there, but before, I just do have to mention, there's no way you're not going to get a political answer out of Jason Sherlock, given he's worked in close quarters with Dublin PRO Shep. That's all I'll say. A great man is Shep, a good Erin's Isle man, but you're always going to be batting away those questions, Ruby.
Look, I was pretty good at it myself, Jane, so don't worry about it. But Jason, how did you learn to verbalise those disappointments? You can feel defeat and you can feel disappointments, but to verbalise them, to explain them to a team of players and get them to understand defeat, how difficult a task is that?
Well, I think obviously first is having the experience certain situations, and like that obviously helps players if you've experienced a situation that they can then apply to their own kind of performance. I think a lot depends on the players. At the end of the day, you need players that are coachable. You need players that are willing to listen, willing to learn. And I was very lucky with the group that I worked with. That's the way they were. Success wasn't a barrier for their growth or their learning. They turned up every day wanting to become better, wanting to learn, and that makes life as a coach a lot easier.
You said yourself after you won an All-Ireland that you possibly lost a little bit of focus. So you took that lesson and you kept it with the Dublin footballers because they managed to maintain it for so long. Was that one of the lessons?
Well, again, it's defining success. So I suppose success for some people is the piece of tin at the end of the year. But I suppose what was great about that team, and I suppose most elite sports teams and people, is success is the barometer of success is an individual thing. It's about the performance. And again, you mentioned Shane Lowry. It was great to see him having success at the weekend. But he knew and he knows he's playing well. So he's challenging himself. The outcome is inevitable if he plays to the level that he can play. And I suppose as a sports person, that's the ideal scenario, that you're not being challenged by the opposition or by the conditions. You're being challenged by yourself. You set your own standards. And I suppose as a coach, it makes things a lot easier if that's how a player applies themselves and thinks.
Do you miss the coaching? And is that something you want to get into? And listen, I know the elephant in the room, we've seen the headlines, you were in the running for the Monaghan job, and that's something that didn't materialise, and I think you covered that yesterday, to be fair. But in general terms of getting back into coaching, is that something you miss and you want to do now?
I wouldn't say I miss it, Shane. I think I'm 3 years removed from being involved with Dublin. As I said, I have a great role in DCU, great family, playing a lot of golf. But I suppose, like us all, we're always curious and we're always keen to challenge ourselves. And I've been very lucky to have a big kind of experience through GAA. And I suppose there have been times where I've been sought out to get involved, and I'm kind of open to seeing if there's something where, one, it interests me, and then two, where I can feel I can add value. I was lucky enough to coach for a while and I really enjoyed it, but at the same time, as a person, I'm just kind of curious to kind of learn and grow. So it's on that basis that I kind of be open to kind of opportunities that may arise.
So we might see you in some inter-county setup next year?
Well, at the moment, no, is the answer. But certainly, like as I said, I'm like a sports person, I'm a GA person, and I have a big interest in it and I have a big care. So I'll always like to be involved in some way. I suppose what capacity that is, who knows? But as I said, as it stands, I won't be involved with an inter-county team next year.
I'm just listening to your answers. Learn and grow. To learn and grow means also to develop. So would a natural progression for you to be the top man the next time you go back into a role?
Not necessarily. I think I wouldn't be concerned about the role or the title. I'd be more concerned about, does it motivate me and can I add value? And it, depending on that, would kind of dictate whether it'd be something that I'd be involved to get interested in getting involved in. So I suppose I wouldn't have. I was asked this yesterday at the press event. Have I an ambition to be a manager? I don't. I don't have an ambition to be a manager, but I am open and curious about where I might fit in or where I might add value in the future.
Well, the current setup with Dublin, I suppose the newest headline today, Jason, was that, of course, Leinster confirming Declan Darcy as their performance coach. Is that an opportunity missed, do you think, by Dublin GAA to bring Declan back into the fold, given how closely you've worked with him in the past?
Well, from what I know of Declan, any team that doesn't have him involved have missed out on an opportunity. And I suppose Dublin did have Declan involved for a big number of years with Jim Gavin. So I think it's a very shrewd move by Leinster Rugby, knowing what Declan is like as a person, but also in terms of his expertise and the impact he had on that Dublin football team. I know he's doing a doctorate actually in DCU as well, so I think for him it's the right step, and it's a really interesting step to see whether he can cross the barrier of codes. Like, obviously going from amateur GAA to professional rugby is a big challenge, but I've no doubt that Declan will give it everything to succeed.
Was there something you'd like to do, going to a professional sport as a coach?
I'd love to. As I said, I played a lot of sports and I've an interest in sports, and you can see that commonality amongst a number of sports. So yeah, it's something that I'd be very interested in. I was lucky enough to kind of go down to the Irish rugby team with Joe Schmidt when I was involved with Dublin, and we had guys in, and again, you're talking a common language when it comes to high performance. So again, I certainly would have an interest, and I've looked at other sports to assist me and my Gaelic football coaching. So again, I think you have to be open to any experience or opportunity that might arise.
That's something that often crossed my mind as well. I think it would be fascinating to see how you can marry one sport into another, and what I often learn from other sports as I did. Jason, you did mention yesterday too in your presser about the split season, and as a fan maybe it needs to be tweaked. As a player, it's probably working. You did also play for Lafina. Do you think the GAA need to stick with this for a while and get us fans used to the tradition, and that'll be the easiest way of marrying it in?
Yeah, well, I think there's a number of kind of opinions you need to take on board, and the spectators are one. And again, I've spoke to so many people over the last few weeks that are missing the inter-county season, and rightly so. It's been, I suppose, a staple diet for so long. But in saying that, we have the club championship that's gone. I know in Dublin at the weekend, we're kind of coming to the business end as well. So that's great for clubs, and obviously there'll be great showcases as well in those matches. You mentioned the players, Ruby, and obviously they're a key cog in the whole thing, because at the end of the day they're the guys that sacrifice the time and give up the time to play for their counties and for their clubs. So I suppose their opinion is really important. And then the association, obviously we want the association to continue to progress. There's a commercial element to that, but there's also a pipeline element, and I would be concerned and worried about our young boys and girls if they don't have the role models of our inter-county stars for pretty much now six to seven months. Like, it is a big gap. You are depending on that club kind of championship season and competition to really engage the young boys and girls moving forward. But as I said, that's for the GAA to kind of reflect upon, and hopefully they will come up with a system that kind of keeps both spectators, the players and the association happy.
Well, Jason, you are here to promote work out what works for you. Have you worked out what works for you?
I'm getting there. I suppose when I finished playing, I think physically I probably had my motivation had dwindled in terms of getting out and physically doing stuff. But I think from my point of view now, I kind of look at physical activity, it's not so much about a sacrifice or a commitment, it's actually to enhance our lives, because obviously if you want to live your best life, the healthier you are, the better. And for some people that could be running marathons or whatever. For me, it's potentially going to the gym and playing around the golf every now and then. So I think at whatever level you're at, I think that physical activity or component of your life is really important. So no matter how strenuous that is.
So what's the next big competition in Castleknock Golf Club, Joe?
Good question. There's a charity day here on Saturday, so hopefully I'll get to play in that. Yeah, there was a medal on Sunday, but unfortunately got a bit washed out. So, well, I was never good in the rain, so the same applies on the golf course.
I don't know. I've stood in Hill 16 and seen you a few times in the rain. You haven't been half bad, to be fair. Listen, Jason Sherlock, I'll let you get back to your putting practice there, so apologies for disturbing the golf game.
Quite all right. Hopefully it'll make the difference.
You're a gentleman. Jason Sherlock, thank you very much for taking the call. Just before we do take a break, David Snaid is keeping an eye on the Spurs match. David, what's happening?
Oh, Shane, I was getting out of my seat. I was watching just the second half was actually just about to start, but right on half time, Marcus Edwards for Sporting Lisbon has nearly scored one of the all time great Champions League goals. Think Maradona in 86.
Okay.
Gets the ball on the just in front of the halfway line. Roy's a challenge by Eric Dyer, who came in through the back of him, gets around him, does a little step over. Eric Dyer gets back on his feet and tries to do him from behind again, gets put on his backside again.
Nice.
Keeps on going forward, another little step over, goes past Ben Tekakor.
Yeah,
literally.
He
ends up on his backside as well. Then he plays a quick 1-2 just as Ben Davis is coming over. Ball is played back to him. He's almost in the 6-yard box, manages to somehow shimmy past Romero. He's goal gaping, prods his little right foot at it, and it just goes agonisingly wide after a save. It was, would have been absolutely unreal goal, and the second half has just started, but it's still nil up.
Okay, well, we'll be chatting football, and Ruby will be letting us know how excited he is for the stall in a few moments time. Stick with us here on Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Now, there are about 10 minutes left on this evening's Game On, and there are 4 days, 21 hours, 12 minutes and 54 seconds until the Listowel races. Ruby Walsh, how excited are you?
I love Listowel. It's a great meeting in North Kerry. 7 days of it from Sunday until next Saturday. Starts with an all-jump card on Sunday afternoon. Same again on Monday. Moves to the flat on Tuesday. And of course on Wednesday, Shane, you have the Guinness Kerry National, which will be a great race. But it builds through the week. The crowds will get bigger as it goes on. Wednesday always gets a huge crowd, as does Friday, which is Ladies' Day, which sees the Ladbrokes Handicap Hurdle being run this year. But it is a great festival, the Harvest Festival. And it's a great tradition there.
Absolutely. You mentioned the Kerry National. Of course, Hewick set to carry top weight in this year's €2,000 Guinness Kerry National at Listowel on Wednesday, September 21st, with Shark Hanlon's Star Chaser seeking his third big race victory of the year.
Yeah, and it'll be a big ask for him. He's up in the handicap, Shane. Obviously, he won what used to be the old Whipred at Sandown. And since then, in handicap terms, he's risen so much up the handicap. Every time you win, you get more weight. He won the Kerry or the Galway Playoff for a mark of 155. He has to run the Kerry National carrying 8 pounds more. It's not that he has to physically carry 8 pounds more. It's he has to give all the opposition 8 pounds more. So okay. He's up. He has to give Al Barra 8 pounds more than he had to give him in Galway. Al Barra finished third in the Galway Plate. So, you know, the Rasso was second. All the big names are in there, but the higher up you rise, the more weight you have to give away, the harder it gets, and it'll be a huge performance from Hewick if he can add the Kerry National to the Galway Plate.
Okay, before we cross to Fergal Brennan for Liverpool team news, just a bit of a news headline as well, Ruby. Giggin Soundhouse Dud and Willie Mullins back together 6 years after their high profile split. Is it nice to see this reunification?
Yeah, sure. Look, I suppose, what is it? Time heals everything, is that what they say? Or heals most things. Yeah, look, it is. It was since 2016 when they pulled out, but I think when they left, Shane, they had over 46 horses. They've come back with one. But, you know, things start everywhere, and it is, they're a huge operation. Look, in 2019, they said themselves, Jigginstown, that they were winding down and weren't buying any more horses, but they've obviously done a U-turn on that, and they have started to reinvest. So, yeah, they have one with Willie Mullins at the moment, and maybe that'll be more. But you know, racing is like every other sport. It's like listening to the women's team in Galway needing supporters. Racing needs owners, supporters as well. It's all about investment. So as long as Jigginstown are investing in horse racing, it's good for the sport.
Absolutely. Okay, let's cross to Fergal Brennan, who has team news at Anfield.
Yeah, hello. 4 changes from the reverse fixture last week away at Napoli in terms of starting 11 for Liverpool. Joel Matip, Thiago Alcantara, Diogo Jota and Kostas Tsimikas all come in. Tsimikas replaces Andy Robertson at left back. He's out injured, and Gomez, Milner and Firmino all drop down to the bench. Probably expected changes. I'm here at Anfield tonight and I've just been chatting to some colleagues in the press room, and they kind of echoed that idea that last week's performance, Jurgen Klopp said it was the worst since he's arrived at Liverpool, which was maybe a little bit of an exaggeration, but it certainly gives the mood that he's in and how he's been motivating the players over the last few weeks, or the last few days even, sorry. And I think it needed a freshening up. One of the big aspects of the Napoli defeat last week was the errors and the tiredness, the sluggishness in the players. They needed a bit of a rest, certainly through the spine of the team, and Thiago coming in will give that. Diogo Jota's a really interesting one. He's had injury issues over the last few months, and you get the sense that hopefully, if things go well tonight, he'll give Liverpool a bit of zip that they need. Andy Robertson's an important player for them, but Tsimikas has shown that he's a fairly solid deputy for him.
Is James Milner the biggest casualty in that?
Probably, yeah, on the face of it. obviously he's very well liked amongst Liverpool fans. He's a very honest, kind of straightforward type of player, and he's a good ambassador for the club and for Premier League football as a whole, really. But that was one of the big giveaways away in Naples last week, that he just got a bit overrun. He was a bit late to certain tackles. He possibly even was lucky not to be sent off after a couple of them. And Thiago probably brings a bit more calmness. He's easier at getting around the pitch than James Milner is. I still think Milner will have a role to play for Liverpool this season. Klopp loves him as well. But at the moment, I think he needs to be pulled out of the fire, because Liverpool can't really afford to be carrying any passengers based on the way that they're playing at the minute.
Okay, good stuff, Fergal Brennan. Thank you very much. Liverpool v Ajax kicks off at 8 p.m. live on RT2 Television and the RT Player. There's one game in the League of Ireland Premier Division. Derry City are hosting Sligo Rovers, and Eric White can set the scene from the Roy McBride Brandywell.
Well, Shane, a very good evening. This one previously postponed due to Sligo Rovers' European commitments. It's the first of two remaining matches between the sides this season. Derry unbeaten in their last 11 league games, now a run stretching back to a 2-1 defeat away to Sligo at the end of May after Friday night's narrow 1-0 win over Bohemians. The hosts going for a fourth league win on the bounce, which would reduce the gap on leaders Shamrock Rovers back to just 1 point. That victory over Bows was, of course, marred by a lengthy stoppage due to a neck injury sustained by defender Kieran Call. So Shane McAlinney is restored to the starting 11 tonight in one of three changes. The other two see Will Patching back after an ankle injury to replace Sadou Diallo, who is on the bench, along with James Akintunde, as Jimmy McGonigal is also handed a start. Sligo still reeling from losing the points to Dundalk for fielding an ineligible player. Defeated Shelburne 2-0 at Tolka Park on Friday night with goals from Frank Levac and the league's top goal scorer Aidan Keane. John Russell makes one change from that victory, with Will Fitzgerald back in the side to play against his former club in place of the demoted Max Mata. Sligo 10 points adrift of fourth placed St Patrick's Athletic, and despite their recent good form, a return to European football next season looks an outside bet. The sun has disappeared, but the conditions perfect for this evening's game here at the Ryan McBride Brandywell Stadium, which kicks off at 7:45.
Eric White, thank you very much. David Snaid, in a word, Derry or Sligo?
Derry.
There you have it. Ruby.
I agree.
Okay. I thought you were just going to stick the boot in that Sligo beat Shells, but however. Ruby, Sinead, that's Derry. All we've time for.
Cheers, Shane Dawson. Thank you very much. I believe Tara Kumar is up next.
She is indeed. Thanks for listening.
RTE 2FM.